This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting KUOW Public Radio in Seattle. There are shows so wild and weird that you can't help but wonder how the creators got TV executives to buy in. The Netflix animated series BoJack Horseman is one of those shows. Will Arnett plays BoJack, a horse-human hybrid who's a washed-up former star of a 90s sitcom called Horsin' Around. Three little orphans, one, two, three, without a home or a family tree. Until this horse said, live with me, and now we got a new family. We're laughing and learning and loving a lot. The show chronicles BoJack's attempts to get himself and his life in order. It also follows his agent, the cat Princess Carolyn, his friend Diane, who's human, his human roommate Todd, and his frenemy, a dog named Mr. Peanut Butter. The dog was the star of his own cheesy sitcom, a ripoff of Horsin' Around called Mr. Peanut Butter's House.
Who's that dog?
Mr. Peanut Butter.
Knick knack patty whack, give a dog a bone.
Who's that dog?
Mr. Peanut Butter.
This all sounds pretty silly. And BoJack Horseman often embraces goofy, wacky slapstick, from Todd starting a school for dentist clowns, to this running gag of Princess Carolyn's tongue twisters.
Courts me if you can, the 1940s Cannes, France set story of a can-can dancer who contracts cancer but continues to can-can as a canny cadaver who plays the accordion with Kevin Corrigan, Kevin Klein, Chris Pine, and Chris Kattan.
Got it.
But it's not all silly. A lot of the show is pretty dark. A melancholy exploration of a deeply flawed individual whose self-loathing, alcoholism, and drug addiction lead him to disrespect his girlfriends, alienate his friends, and, in this latest season, physically assault someone.
How do you make something right when you've made it so wrong you can never go back?
The latest season looks at the often messy process of what it takes to really deal with your actions and earn forgiveness. Todd Zwillick interviewed BoJack Horseman's creator, Raphael Bob Waksberg. We'll share that conversation after this.
Would you put on a sweater that once belonged to Hitler? Can Chinese zodiac signs predict who's going to be a great scientist? And what happens when you use a training method for dogs to teach doctors? Answers to all those questions on my podcast, Hidden Brain.
Raphael, what a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. The pleasure's mine.
Well, I want to do some disclosure at the very top of this. Ordinarily, in an interview like this, the host is supposed to have distance and not much of an opinion, maybe, about what they're covering. I just want to disclose that I'm a fan. I mean, this is a thrill for me. You have got a hit on your hands, Raphael. Season 5 on Netflix. But I've always wondered sort of what constitutes a hit now in the world of subscription TV and streaming.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen our show described as a smash hit, a sleeper hit, a cult hit, a flop. Nobody's watching it. Everybody's watching it. I have no idea. All I know is some people seem to like it, and that works for me. And we keep being allowed to make more, so that's good for me, too.
Just take a minute. Who is BoJack Horseman? Who is he?
Well, we've spent 5 seasons exploring that, and I still don't know if we know the answer. BoJack Horseman is a horse who is also a man. It's an animated show for adults, and I can already hear the listener maybe changing the channel. I don't think it's necessarily what people are expecting when they hear an animated show for adults. And that, I think, is the magic of the show, and that's the appeal for me, is that unlike other animated shows that are very status quo oriented and self-contained, Ours is a show that evolves and changes over time. So over the course of 5 seasons, the characters have changed, the relationships have changed, there are consequences to the characters' actions. And it's really, for me, a show about sadness and melancholy and isolation, which I guess there are other cartoons like that, but it's not just about having fun and being silly, although it is also very fun and silly. You've really kind of cornered me. I'm not quite sure how to describe this show. You'd think I'd be better about it by now. But I'll tell you the plot. The plot, it's a horseman. In the 90s, he was on a TV show called Horsin' Around about a horse raising 3 human kids. Now he's a washed-up actor. He lives in the Hollywood Hills, and he complains about everything. That's where he is, where we first find him. And over the course of the last 5 seasons, a lot of other things have happened.
So he was on a show back in the 90s that was essentially, I would say, like a Full House type of three.
Sure.
Camera sitcom, a real piece of trash.
Well, it has its fans. Some people love Horsin' Around. I think some people watch BoJack Horseman and they go, yeah, this is okay, but I'd really much rather watch Horsin' Around. So to each their own.
Well, BoJack, though, he had fame and success, plenty of money, a nice house. He is a deeply unhappy person in Hollywood. He has a good sense of humor. He has fun sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But misery and depression, as you said, isolation and loneliness are never too far away for him.
Yeah, that's right. It's a comedy. Yeah, he's a sad guy, and I pride myself in the fact that we take that sadness very seriously, and we explore in some ways the root cause of it and also the effect that it has on others. I think this is a show about loneliness, and I think that is why it appeals to so many people, because there aren't a ton of people who were on successful sitcoms in the 80s and 90s, but there are a lot of people who feel lonely sometimes, and I think those people, too, can see something of themselves in BoJack.
Not only BoJack the man, but his troubling personality is set in a Hollywood that seems like the worst possible place for someone like him. He's got damaged self-esteem. He's selfish. He's got a substance abuse problem. That's the tip of the iceberg, really, for BoJack. And he lives and inhabits a world with all the wrong enabling forces, it seems to me, that really push against him. I know I'm overanalyzing BoJack, but it also is a send-up about Hollywood.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right, that in many ways, this town and this industry is the worst place to be if you're someone who needs limits and help, because this is a town that's built up to help you not get help, and to enable you and allow you your worst vices. I think a big fear of mine as someone who has found some success in this industry and may continue to find more, is that eventually I will get to a place where people stop telling me I'm wrong, and then I will make some very big mistakes. And I'm lucky right now that I've surrounded myself with people who are not afraid to tell me when I'm screwing up and when I need to apologize and when I need to check myself and ask for help. But I think it's very easy in this town to find the people who won't do that. And then I think you're in real trouble.
Well, David Thackman writes about your show. He says that BoJack Horseman is the only animated show that's made me belly laugh, sob, and sit in shocked silence all in the course of a single episode. Is that what you're going for, hitting all these different notes in a single go?
Yes. we're very ambitious. And, I think one of the things I enjoy about the show, it keeps it fresh for me, is that it's a lot of different things. And I think we have a lot of different audiences who enjoy the show for different reasons, right? So there are people who say, this is the funniest show I've ever seen, and it makes me cry, and it makes me think, and it made me call my mom. And then there are also sections of that. Like, there are people who say, I don't find this show very funny at all, but it moves me and I care about the characters. And there are also people who say, I think this show's hilarious and I don't care about the characters at all, but I love the jokes. And I think this is a show for all of those people. And depending on what you go into it looking for, you're going to get something different out of it. And that's really fun for me. And that makes every day of work fun, because I come in and go, okay, what kind of show do I want to make today? And that can change, yes, sometimes within one episode, or sometimes even within one scene, or even within one line of dialogue. You could start heartbreaking and end hilarious, or start with some goofy wordplay and end with a real bummer.
And I wanted to ask you exactly about that dynamic on the show, because on one level, you've got a lot of crafty, sometimes corny wordplay, a lot of puns, a lot of slapstick, a lot of animal jokes that could be on any sort of children's cartoon that has to be fun for adults as well,
right,
overlaid on a lot of deep satire, and then overlay that on some of the deepest, at times most troubling emotional stuff that I've seen on television. I mean, slapstick and pratfalls, and I've had to look away from BoJack once or twice.
Well, it's funny because sometimes people tell me when they meet me at like a bar mitzvah or something, oh, my son loves that show. And I get really worried. I go, oh, have you seen it? They go, no, but my son loves it, who's 12 years old. And it's a very adult show. And, you know, not because of the drug humor or the sex humor, which, of course, there is plenty of that and swearing as well. But because I think it goes to some very deep, dark, adult places. And I use that word adult to mean complicated and nuanced and troubling. This is definitely not a show for kids. But I think, you know, one thing we found when we were making the first season is we wanted it to be silly and we wanted it to also be serious. And the question was, can we do both? And one thing we found was that, yes, we can. And rather than, water itself down, it actually helps the show to have both these poles. And that, to me, I think it creates kind of a savory and sweet salted caramel kind of sensation, where it is both very real and sincere and melancholy, but also very bright and silly and cartoony. And that I think the farther you go in one direction, almost counterintuitively, the farther that allows you to go in the other direction. And I don't think we've found a limit yet for how silly we can go or how dark and introspective we can go. I think our latest season might be both our silliest and our darkest at the same time.
Raphael, let's talk about season 5.
Great, let's get into it. Let's get nerdy.
A big amount of season 5 is spent poking fun at the idea of the auteur showrunner himself, right? There's a line that's actually something along the lines of, television is a collaborative medium where one person gets all the credit. And
I have to say, when that line came up at the table read, it got a much bigger laugh than I was expecting from the crowd of people there.
I mean, is it a little surreal to be a showrunner on a press tour about a season of your show where one of the characters is a showrunner who I'm sure would kill to be on a press tour talking about a show?
A little bit. It's strange. And you know, one of the things we wanted to talk about when we were putting the season together is this weird moment we're in now of the auteurist showrunner, which is really like a new development in the last 10 years or so. And it strikes me as very odd because I don't think that I'm a brilliant genius who, you know, touches a show and turns it into gold and it all just, you know, flows out of the pencil, which is connected to my brain. It's a very collaborative process, and we have people making it better every step of the way. I have an amazing writing room. The cast brings so much. The designs by Lisa Hanawalt. The directors bring so much to the episodes. The storyboard animators, the editors. It really takes a village. So it's odd that, yes, I'm doing all these interviews now and talking about the show and talking about how I made the show, because that's not how a TV show gets made at all. And I think anyone who presents that as how a TV show gets made is trying to sell something.
But then what exactly does the whiteboard in the writer's room look like when you've got the wordplay, the slapstick, the puns, and the pratfalls overlaid on some of the deep, dark themes that run throughout the seasons? And the show also has a memory, a long memory. His mistakes follow him.
It's a very, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think we write the show like a drama, but we're a room full of comedy writers, so we can't help but make it funny. But we really are mostly interested in, you know, what is the character arc of the season? What are the themes we're looking to explore? What are the consequences of these actions? You know, we take it very seriously. You know, but then in the middle of that, we remember, like, oh, right, and this guy's a talking octopus. You know, we're exploring familial trauma here, but also this woman is dating a man that is clearly just three small boys stacked on top of each other under a trench coat like the Little Rascals. So the storytelling is quite serious, but the stories themselves can be quite silly. You know, one way I think of it is we're telling stories about real grounded characters in a crazy cartoon universe.
Lots of animated shows have gotten made over the last 20 years thanks to the success of The Simpsons, largely, but not shows as deep and as adult as BoJack. To whom do you think you owe your origins in television? Who do you see as your forerunners?
Oh, you mean my influences?
Yeah.
Or do you mean literally the people who helped me have a television show?
No, I mean the shows that you watched, or even if you weren't that into them, the shows that made it possible for
sure.
A show like BoJack to be such a hit with American audiences.
Well, I think, you know, obviously the giant is The Simpsons, and I think it would be disingenuous for me to claim that that show had no influence on me or my show or the success of my show. You know, one of the best compliments I got on the first season of BoJack is someone said it felt like a season-long version of a sad episode of The Simpsons. Mm. But also, when I was pitching the show, I really wanted it to exist outside of the bubble or the perceived bubble of animated television. You know, I said, when we start season one, you're going to watch it, and at first it's going to feel like a typical animated show, like a Simpsons or a South Park. But then over the course of the season, as you realize what's happening, it's going to feel more like a Girls or even a Mad Men. And so I wanted this to feel more like a dramedy and to really take things seriously in a way that people don't expect animation to, even though I think a lot of animated shows actually do take things very seriously. But those shows were certainly influences as well.
One of the main attractions of your show for me are the amazing voice performances that you have.
Oh, yeah.
Will Arnett as BoJack, Amy Sedaris,
incredible.
Princess Carolyn, the sort of aging Hollywood manager, producer, Kat. And a lot of others, too. You even have Keith Olbermann in there at some point.
Yeah. Keith Olbermann is one of the first people we cast. As a newscaster whale. We had in the script, a Keith Olbermann whale type. And our casting director, Linda LaMontagne, said, I think we can get Keith Olbermann to play this role. Like, really? And we called him. He's like, yeah, sounds like fun. And he's fantastic. And we keep bringing him back season after season. And, you know, one of my first memories of making the show and realizing how fun it was going to be was we had Keith on the phone from New York and we had him do all his lines. And then at the end, we said, can we also get you making some whale noises? And, you know, this is Keith Olbermann, who I thought of as a very serious man, goofing around going, you know, making whale noises. And I thought, this is going to be a fun show, I think.
Well, one of your other main characters is Diane, a Vietnamese-American, mm-hmm. voiced by actress Alison Brie, who's phenomenal. Now,
yeah.
You gave a Slate interview recently and also a Twitter thread, which is the way you have to do it these days. And you mentioned one ramification of that choice, casting Alison Brie as Diane, that you tended to avoid referencing her Asian-Americanness in the show. Now, this season, that's changed. Diane does take a trip to the Vietnam of her heritage and talks a lot about how that affects her. How did her casting come about, and how did you begin to have second thoughts about it?
Well, we cast Alison in the first season, and we were about a third of the way into the season when we cast her. We'd been working with a different actress who had to drop out of the show all of a sudden because another show she was on got picked up and there was a contractual issue, so she couldn't be a lead on our show anymore. And so we really scrambled, and Alison came in, and we thought she was amazing, and she's done a great job ever since. But more and more, as I was looking around at the cast and thinking about, you know, how the show was put together and the makeup of the cast, it started to dawn on me that everyone in our cast was white, in our main cast, and a lot of the recurring people we were hiring were white as well. And this wasn't an intentional thing that I was doing as a racist man. It was just I was not paying attention, and we were casting these characters one at a time. And I realized that, oh, this is something I need to start paying better attention to. And so, you know, since then we've tried to cast a wider net and look particularly for diverse voices, and try to have more people of color on the show. But when it comes to Diane specifically, you know, I think there is a real problem in this industry of casting white people in Asian roles. And I was not as aware of that when we first started the show as I am now. And so that's something that I would do differently, is casting a white person to play a prominent Asian character. And, you know, as I said in these other interviews, I think it's hurt the show because I think my own self-consciousness has prevented us from telling Asian stories. I think because I guess I didn't want people to talk about this. It felt like this is a mistake we made. And if I can just, you know, avoid it or, you know, glide past it, then, you know, maybe this won't become an issue or this, you know, won't become the thing that I end up talking about in every interview. Mm. And I think that was a disservice to the character, because I think it ended up, you know, we ended up treating her as just like a white character or as if race didn't matter. And it's difficult on our show because in some ways race doesn't matter because there's also talking elephants and, you know, anteaters and giraffes walking around. So it's hard to say how is an Asian American human's experience that different from a white American human's experience. But I think there are differences and I'm more interested in exploring them now. And I feel like the avoidance of the issue was holding us back narratively.
Well, instead of avoiding it, then you took responsibility for it on your own initiative. And as I said, in season five, Diane confronts those issues directly for herself, makes a trip to Vietnam, and narrates an entire episode about the experience for her. I also mentioned Amy Sedaris' voice of Princess Carolyn. She's my favorite character. I just love the way she voice acts. In one episode this season, Carolyn is dealing with her mother, voiced by Amy's brother, the author, David Sedaris. Take a listen to one of their exchanges. This is from season five, episode five, The Story of Amelia Earhart.
The problem is when people with losing numbers think they're winners.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Then what the hell are these?
College brochures?
You think you're going to some fancy college in California, all the way on the other side of the country from your mother? You're going to abandon me?
Mom, it's not about you.
You see L.A. No, you will not see L.A. Even if you get into one of these places, how are you going to pay for it?
I'll get a job or a paid internship.
Well, la-dee-da. I did not realize I was in the presence of someone who is going to get a paid internship.
Mom, you need to go to bed.
See, that's the difference between you and me, Princess Carolyn. I know where I belong. This is my bed.
That was Amy Sedaris as Princess Carolyn, David Sedaris, her brother, as her mother, Cutie Cutie Cupcake. They're both cats, by the way. And Amy and David are from North Carolina, which you know if you've read David Sedaris' books. And I think that Amy and her brother, David, are channeling something that's very real to them.
Perhaps. You know, it's funny listening to that conversation because I think it really illustrates what we were talking about before, is that that is actually a very serious conversation between a mother and her daughter. And it's fraught with drama. But then at the same time, you know, if you're watching it, you can't escape the fact that these are both pink cats called Princess Carolyn and Cutie Cutie Cupcake. And it's sprinkled with jokes like the UCLA, you will not see LA, this wordplay in the middle of this very serious conversation. That was a real joy to get David Sedaris to be a guest star. You know, we asked Amy, do you think he would be interested? We have this part for him. And she said, I think that sounds like a lot of fun. And so he called in and he was very self-conscious about it. And he said, you know, I'm not really an actor, but I want to do this for Amy. But if I'm terrible, you know, you can replace me and you don't have to feel bad about it. And then he said the first line. I said, oh, my God, that's Princess Carolyn's mother. He's a total natural. Obviously, he's a performer. I mean, he reads his own stuff all the time. So I don't know what he had to be nervous about. But I think he gives an incredible performance. And I feel like you can really hear the family between them. It feels like they're a family, which, of course, they are.
In episode four of this season, it's called BoJack the Feminist. It gets real in Hollywood because BoJack gets credit for speaking out against Vance Wagner. He's a bad Hollywood man kind of character, maybe sort of like a Mel Gibson type or somebody like that.
Mel Gibson type, you can say, yeah.
Here's Will Arnett as BoJack talking to the hosts of The Squawk, who are all birds, obviously, during that episode.
It is really incredible you're taking a stand against your own co-star.
No, I'm not taking any stand.
I mean, the guy choked his wife, and most of Hollywood's like, no biggie, good for him.
Okay, well, obviously it's not good he choked his wife.
Wow.
But... No. I wasn't trying to make some bold statement or anything. It's just that choking your wife is bad.
Really?
Okay.
Can I just tell you how amazing it is to hear a man say that?
Well, Paloma, someone needed to take a stand. Call me crazy. I mean, this is just old BoJack talking, but how about we don't choke any women?
So true, right? Don't choke women!
Don't choke women!
Raphael, what... when I watched this episode, I laughed and I turned away. It made me uncomfortable as could be because this conversation goes horribly wrong, even though he's saying all the right things, I guess. Don't choke
women. Yeah, well, I mean, I agree that we should not choke women.
Right.
That certainly is nothing to laugh about. But, I mean, to me, I think the comedy of this episode and BoJack's character in this episode comes from the real place that I've experienced, you know, from being a male feminist, you know, how often I feel like I and other men get credit for the bare minimum, you know, or for, you know, tweeting out something that women have been shouting about for the last 50 years. All of a sudden, like, I'm a progressive feminist hero. And I think that's really sad. But like many things on our show, it is sad, but also darkly funny. And so we really wanted to explore that and kind of point out that, yeah, even people who have the best of intentions can sometimes fall into this trap of patting themselves on the back for doing the bare minimum. And then also people sometimes who don't have the best of intentions can also pat themselves on the back.
Just doing a bit of signaling instead of
real
work.
Right. And I think it is important for men and people with privilege to speak out on behalf of those who do not have those privileges. But I think it's a delicate thing and it requires sensitivity of how to do it in a helpful way and not in a self-serving way.
BoJack is the kind of guy who would love to just signal a little bit and get out of it in a self-serving way.
Yes, yeah, so he'll take the credit without doing the work. That's BoJack's style.
And then just get people to leave him alone afterward.
Yeah.
Well, Raphael, you know, one thing I've noticed about BoJack, and it's not hard to notice, is that he manages to repeat his same mistakes over and over again. And I don't like to think that he hasn't grown at all in a positive way over five seasons, that he hasn't learned anything. Sometimes I get a little bit annoyed with him that he just hasn't learned. I mean, has he? Has he grown up at all?
I think he has. I think progress is never a straight line. I like to think that he's taking, you know, two steps forward, one step back, maybe sometimes three steps back. But I would like to think that he's, you know, crawling and grasping in the right direction. And I think it is to be determined where he will end up. But I, you know, like you, get frustrated with him sometimes. And I hope for better. And I think, you know, the story will be the story. And every day we come in and we think about, all right, well, what's going to happen next? And I think we'll see where it goes.
Princess Carolyn is striving to have a more meaningful life outside of just money and work.
Yeah, I think we'll see where that goes as well. You know, I one of the fun things about having a show that's been on five seasons now is, you know, you start with the BoJack Horseman story. And then, you know, at first all these other characters are there to kind of help him tell his story, but then gradually we flesh them out too. And so now I think we have five really interesting, nuanced main characters that all carry their own stories and have their own wants and desires, dreams and fears. And so it's been really fun to flesh those out and explore the nooks and crannies of their narratives.
It's a world of animals and people and puns and slapstick and deep, deep, dark, sometimes off-putting themes, but it is one of the best shows on the air. It is BoJack Horseman. Like I said, I'm a fan, and I'm just not going to hide it, Raphael Babo-Axelrod, because it's a pleasure for me to talk to you. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. This is a blast.
Raphael Bob Waxberg is the creator and showrunner of BoJack Horseman. Season 5 is streaming on Netflix. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, D.C., distributed by NPR.
Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.